Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we know about the fierce urgency of now with this Obama jobs bill, so urgent, in fact, that Harry Reid might be able to find a little bit of time for it sometime next month, maybe, on the schedule in the U.S. Senate that's controlled by the Democrats. But nonetheless, the president's going around the country, specifically to sites designed to tweak Republican leaders. He already had a stop in Richmond, Virginia, to talk about all the crumbling infrastructure in House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's district. Well, today it's a big twofer. He's going to go to Cincinnati with the backdrop of this bridge that connects Cincinnati to the state of Kentucky. John Boehner, of course, from the Cincinnati area, Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, and talk about how even in their own backyards, these people are standing in the way of progress and infrastructure that'll improve the economy, blah, 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 blah. And so...
That's a direct quote, right, Greg?
That's exactly. That's from the transcript that's embargoed until later today when he gives the speech at the bridge. Only a couple of problems here. The president talked in his job speech and elsewhere specifically about this bridge. He loves it so much, about the repairs that it needs. Well, it turns out it actually doesn't need any repairs. It's good probably for another 10 to 15 years. What it is congested, so they're actually planning to build an entirely separate bridge, not fix the one that's already there. Also, of course, because it's a new project, there is a mountain of environmental hoops to jump through. So new jobs for this project wouldn't be available until most people think at least 2013, probably 2015, and it wouldn't be done till about 2022. Beyond that, even the White House affirms that there's no actual provision in the bill for this specific bridge or any specific project because the money would be allocated to the states that could then pick their project. So Obama falling in love with this bridge is yet another crumbling piece of the infrastructure of his horrific plan.
So, Greg, what you're saying here is that the message from Obama today in defense and to urge us all to support his proposal, the American Jobs Act, is literally, I have a bridge to sell you.
Right.
You know, I suppose you would think after the bridge to nowhere, politicians would avoid bridges as if they were vampires or something. You know, you shouldn't cross them. They can only but lead to trouble. The irony is that, I mean, not being someone who is automatically reflexively anti-infrastructure spending. Look, if that bridge only has 10 to 15 more years worth of life in it, well, then maybe they should think about doing some repairs to it or particularly, you know, doing that. However, the question is, how much should be paid by locals and how much should be paid by you know, taxpayers across the country? And then the second thing that kind of comes to mind there is any infrastructure project is going to create a certain amount of jobs. However, if you take a look at recovery.gov, as Kevin Williamson did, I think, a couple of days ago, and I found a couple of others, just running the numbers, I mean, it's easy to find a lot of projects where you can find, I think Kevin found the interpretive dance one, which was spending about $700,000 per job created. I found a lock construction one in Kentucky that was going to take $1.5 million per job created. Now, look, maybe the dam really needs new locks construction. I believe they're called Leviathan locks or something like that. It seemed like very appropriately Orwellian for this project. And that was coming out to $1.5 million per job. It wasn't that hard to find the refurbishing of a federal office building by the General Services Administration. That one came out to like $2 million per job created. And you look, run the average of all of the total amounts of jobs created by all these things and the total amount of money that had been spent so far. Oh, by the way, there's like $100 billion still sitting there that has been allocated, that has been said, okay, we're going to spend it on this project, but it has not yet been spent by the various contractors who are supposed to do this work, comes out to about a little more than $3 million per job. So the job creation record of infrastructure projects is generally pretty darn lousy, or at least in terms of cost effectiveness. And so it's one of those things where if Obama wants to say, look, this river and this city needs a new bridge, fine. You know, I think a lot of people – I think – where a lot of conservatives start really grinding their teeth down to powder on these things is when infrastructure is used as this kind of magic wand for job creation. And it feels like the only way Obama can justify these sorts of things is by making these pie-in-the-sky projections about job creation, how quickly the money will get out the door, et cetera. And if he just had a little more realism, a little more seriousness about these things, I think there would not be this reflexive opposition when he says we need to spend more on infrastructure.
So basically, by your math and by Kevin's math, that $800 billion created, what, about 300,000, maybe?
Yeah.
Not exactly going too well here. So half of that is not even enough to keep the unemployment rate steady, much less drop it in 1 month if they all came online. In case anyone's wondering why this is actually the good martini, it's because, once again, the president's case for this huge government spending is once again being shredded, and that can only be a good thing.
Right now, the examples like this illustrate that Obama's case for his jobs plan are as shaky as the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, you know, that footage you always see of it swinging and shaking back and forth.
Yes, exactly right.
Perhaps I should just stay away from bridge jokes. This is the... That'd be a better visual joke than audio, I suspect.
Speaking of the bad martini, which this one probably could have been folded into if we had tried hard enough, we toyed with the good martini today of the fact that Gary Johnson is actually going to be allowed to debate in the Fox News debate, because apparently in some poll he actually achieved 1%, which is the Fox News threshold. And so he'll be at the debate in Orlando tonight. Not really sure if John Huntsman still qualifies, but he's going to be there anyway. But Jim, you have a bone to pick with Fox and everyone else, because you believe out of the three Republican presidential candidates who up until now have been left out of the debate, America's really missing out on not only a good policy approach from Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, but a heck of a stand-up comedy routine.
It is. And I am, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart, or perhaps my head, for Thaddeus McCotter, Republican congressman from Michigan. First, quick note on Gary Johnson. And this is not anti-Gary Johnson. I think, in fact, having him in the debate tonight will be kind of an interesting experiment. Johnson is kind of seen as a more classic libertarian, aligns with Ron Paul on a lot of issues. He's pro-marijuana legalization, generally pro-drug legalization, much more kind of like Ron Paul, kind of isolationist in foreign policy. And so you look at all that, it'll be interesting to see how does the audience respond to what we might call Ron Paulism separate from Ron Paul. I think it's safe to say that Ron Paul is an intriguing figure and has a very distinct not just in his stances, but in his tone when he goes up on the debate. I mean, when you see Ron Paul up there, it's not just he's like, well, I think we should be a little more hands-off with Iran. I believe he said something in the vein of, well, what's the worst that could happen if Iran gets a nuclear weapon? and that's not traditional in a Republican primary debate. So it'll be interesting to see if libertarianism gains more traction when you separate it from the combative and some might say cantankerous personality of Ron Paul, or whether the issue is the stances themselves. So, I have no problem with bringing in Gary Johnson. It's just that Thaddeus McCotter has a very dry, quiet tone, almost like Ben Stein asking, Bueller, Bueller. Have you ever seen the comedian Stephen Wright, who has this very dry wit? McCotter has this tendency. And have you ever seen him, often making little asides, little sarcastic remarks? And yet the guy is a down-the-line small government conservative. And I think, I was watching a recent speech. I had it on the campaign spot recently. He made this great devastating line in which he said, look, when you think about it, in America today, the single most powerful special interest is big government itself. And Barack Obama is its chief lobbyist. I think that's an accurate depiction of the state between government and our economy today. And I think it's a devastating line against Obama. And it's just one of those things where, look, I realize a guy who's struggling to get 1% is not a terribly likely guy to get the nomination, but I kind of like to see him up on stage just to see what the reaction is, whether he's quirky and I'm quirky and that's why it works, or whether he's not as quirky as I think and the whole reason that he hasn't caught fire is that he just hasn't gotten the attention that other candidates do. And when I went back and I checked, McCotter's not doing well in a lot of these polls, but it's worth noting a lot of the pollsters aren't even listing him amongst the options. So he's got to, count on 1% or X percent of the population spontaneously saying he's the guy that they want without being prompted by the pollster. And that's a very high bar to clear. So I would say before all is said and done, put him up on stage. Let's just see what happens. And I have a feeling that in addition to having a bunch of the best one-liners of the night, he might suddenly be a more credible messenger for small government conservatism than he has been so far.
Now, place your bets now whether Rick Santorum or Huntsman gets to move one slot closer to the middle with Gary Johnson in the debate tonight. That'll be the biggest drama of the night, potentially. Anyway, on to martini number three now, and back to Charlie Rangel. Jim, we haven't talked about Charlie Rangel in a long time here, and today we unveil his official portrait, and by we mean people in Congress, not us, as him being, of course, a former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Not sure how much comment will be made as to why he's not still the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Of course, Republicans now control the House. But even before that, he lost his job due to being censured and all sorts of corruption allegations. Not the least of which we should mention is, in conjunction with this portrait, he was allowed to spend money out of his campaign money, people who donated to his campaign, to have this portrait done for $64,000. Jim, I don't know if this is painted with gold dust in the paint, but I personally hope the picture is of him on the veranda at his Dominican villa with a letterhead asking for money on the table beside him where he's posed. All sorts of good things could be in this portrait.
You know, it's you kind of beat me to the punchline there, Greg, because I assume this is going to depict him standing in a suit. And I just kind of think the definitive image that we will all remember of Charlie Rangel forever is him sprawled out on that veranda. I am not someone who should be mocking the physiques of others, but, you know, Charlie had let himself go. There was not exactly the only thing expanding faster than the federal budget was the Rangel waistline, it appeared to be. And just, you know, mouth wide open, conked out in might be exhaustion or just, you know, utter relaxation. Just, you know, a good image of what you want to see in your lawmakers. It's good to know he was having a good time in that resort. So that's how I'll always remember Charlie Rangel, no matter how he's depicted in his official portrait.
Exactly. Now, House Speaker John Boehner apparently has to be there and say some things for the official unveiling. This could be the shortest public statement of his career, but, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I can picture him saying, Charlie Rangel, he's been here quite a while. He's always showed up for work often, and he's been enthusiastic. Congratulations, Charlie.
Jim, talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day. Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.